Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The best way to prevent drug addiction and overdose is to prevent people from abusing drugs in the first place. If they don't start, they won't have a problem. If they do start, it's awfully tough to get off. So we can keep them from going on, and maybe by talking to youth and telling them no good, really bad for you in every way.
In other words,
say yes to your life. And when it comes to drugs and alcohol, just say no.
So for those of you who remember the 80s, President Trump's response there to the interim report from his Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis, chaired by Governor Christie, sounded a lot like Nancy Reagan's infamous Just Say No campaign, didn't it? The commission had recommended several courses of action, including declaring a medical emergency, but seemingly to little avail. With something like 144 Americans dying from drug overdoses every day, and there are reasons to think that may be undercounting, let's take a look at what we know about the reality of opioid use and abuse and how the government is now responding in the Trump era. I'm joined for this by WNYC health reporter Mary Harris and Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at the NYU Marin Institute of Urban Management and the author of books including Drug Policy, What Everyone Needs to Know. Hi, Mary, and welcome back to WNYC. Mark.
Hey, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
So in the commission's report, they wrote, quote, America is enduring a death toll equal to September 11th every 3 weeks, unquote, from drug overdoses. How much of that is from opioids, either prescription drugs or street drugs?
Well, that's a great question. I feel like when we talk about the drug crisis, we have to be so much more specific about what it is we're actually talking about. Are we talking about deaths? Are we talking about addiction in general? Because the United States has a drug problem that isn't just about opioids. We consume, I think, 50%, Mark may know this, of all the pharmaceuticals in the world. So I think that that's what this commission really needs to think about, what we all need to think about, which is what are we talking about when we're talking about the drug crisis?
Well, what are we talking about, Mark? I mean, don't we need to unpack that so that we're not talking about our tendency more than other countries to take prescription drugs in general or use marijuana, whatever. We're talking about a very specific thing, I think, which is addiction and overdoses and overdose deaths from opioids.
Yes and no. So it turns out that about 2/3 of what are recorded as opioid deaths have benzodiazepines on board. Mm-hmm. It's actually not all that
which
easy.
Which are?
Valium, Halcyon, that Xanax, that group. What are called sedative hypnotics, or sometimes tranquilizers.
In addition to the opioids?
In addition to the opioids. I mean, so it gets written down as an opioid death, and once you find the opioid, sometimes the medical examiner doesn't even look any further. But when you look closely, it turns out it's sort of difficult to overdose either on the prescription opioids or on heroin. You have to take about 6 times as much as you needed to get you off. I mean, people do that. People do die. People die of anaphylactic shock, of the opioids alone. But actually, it helps a lot to have something else on board. If it's not benzos, it's alcohol, which is usually not tested for.
And why are people mixing their substances like that?
Both the benzos and alcohol potentiate the opiate, so you get a stronger effect. I think some people find a subjectively different effect that they like. It might be, if you simply wanted to reduce the number of overdose deaths, you might do better telling people not to mix than telling people not to take opioids.
Interesting.
And what I've been really shocked by as I've reported on this is like how little we know. So Boston has one of the few places in the country where you can use and then you can go and be observed by a nurse and they can keep you safe, a safe use site. It's not, you can't inject there, but that's a little bit of a hair. So you can go and you can do that there. And the nurses have found that there are people who use there where they think, oh, I've got to use the naloxone on this guy. But then they realize
that's the overdose, anti-overdose drug.
Exactly. But they don't. Like, they're monitoring folks' vital signs and they realize they're actually rock solid. They're fine. People that we think would be overdose risks actually aren't. People we don't think are overdose risks actually are. So even medically, we don't really know what causes people to die from these drugs.
And right now, the users don't know what they're taking.
Mm-hmm.
People are putting fentanyl in cocaine.
Which makes no sense, which pharmaceutically.
Makes no sense. Except
because
it's a way-
cocaine is an up and fentanyl is a down.
Right. Now, I mean, again, some people like that combination. But it's also a way of taking heavily diluted cocaine and making it feel like something. And so people have no idea they're using opioids.
But you're both saying something I didn't expect to hear in this segment, and that might be surprising a lot of listeners, which is the opioid crisis, as we've been talking about it, is misleading. And it's more complicated than that. And there are more uncertainties than we might have been led to believe in terms of what policies, even what medical practices and drug use habits would fight it.
Exactly. Exactly. This one's really complicated. And as I keep reminding people, we're losing about 33,000 overdose deaths a year to opioids or opioids plus. The estimated death toll from alcohol is about $88,000 a year.
Yeah.
So a crisis depends on what you're looking at.
88,000 people.
88,000 people. Now, that's not acute overdose. That's the total death toll from alcohol. If we had total death toll from opiates, that would also be up there. But and people say, well, gee, the U.S. consumes a lot of drugs. So it's only true if you ignore alcohol. We're actually fairly low on the world league table for alcohol.
Hmm.
So if you look at total intoxicants, we don't especially stand out.
The other thing I guess I'd say is that this is cyclical, where, you know, New York City has released some data showing that we have the highest number of overdose deaths this past year that we've had on record. And that's absolutely true. And it is a shocking rise. But that's measuring from 2000. And a while back, I called a researcher who had looked at some data from the early 90s when we were dealing with crack and heroin as well. And the death rate then was kind of similar to what we're seeing now. The number of deaths was kind of similar. And I think that's really important to keep in mind, where it's all what we're seeing and how the information is being presented.
Right. And again, acute overdose is only a piece of the puzzle. So when you look at people who are long-term heroin addicts from the previous epidemic, you were looking at death rates of 1% to 2% a year. Not counting HIV/AIDS. So, I mean, if we manage to prevent all the overdoses, we've not solved this problem.
Hmm.
My guests are Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at NYU and author of books including Drug Policy, What Everyone Needs to Know, and WNYC health reporter Mary Harris. And our phones are open at 212-433, WNYC 433-9692. As we talk about the opioid crisis and the first Trump administration reaction now to the opioid crisis. Politically, Mary, I was surprised to hear Trump talking in law and order terms at this event in New Jersey, because we know that Governor Christie, who chaired the Opioid Study Commission, has been running public service ads locally urging people to seek treatment for addiction, saying it's a disease, not a crime. And he became so famous for talking about his friend who died from opioid addiction and trying to move the conversation from the criminal sphere to the public health sphere.
Yeah, and the report that Governor Christie gave to the president was fairly progressive, I think. It recommended a lot of expansion of medication-assisted therapy. That's methadone, suboxone, which are opioids that can help people reduce the use of illegal substances. And that's interesting because that's something that Tom Price has come out and said he's against. He would rather have people go cold turkey, even though the evidence is that people do much better when they're on one of these other treatments. So it really does seem to be this back and forth about what works, the public health approach or the law and justice approach. And I think we've all acknowledged over the last decade that the law and justice approach hasn't worked the way we wanted it to. And so we're seeing this push-pull when we see him speak to Tom Price and see him get this report from Governor Christie about what do we do here.
Well, and he's also listening to Jeff Sessions, who never met a prison cell he didn't like. But I have to say, the public health versus criminal justice formulation, which is, you know, absolutely standard, I think is completely misleading. Because we had to distinguish means from ends, right? The goal of all of this is a public health goal, which is reducing drug addiction and drug-related harm. If you actually have techniques that will effectively reduce availability, that's a big contributor to public health, even if cops are doing it. Look, we've got an opiate problem at the moment because we let prescribing get out of control. Well, that's essentially a relaxation of regulation. So I think all the people who have claimed for years, oh, supply doesn't matter, this is all a demand-side phenomenon, that's simply been disproven by the current epidemic. You opened up supply of opiates in Appalachia, where there'd never been an opiate problem because there weren't any heroin dealers, and suddenly you had massive opiate addiction. Mm.
So doctors need to be trained better on when to prescribe, when not to prescribe, for one thing.
Yes, that's a big problem. There's a viewpoint within the health community, right, that we just need to crack down on opiate prescribing. There's a different viewpoint, and I sympathize with both of them, that we also need to treat pain. And I'm very concerned that the current crackdown on prescribing is going to lead to people who are stable on fairly high doses of opiates
and Mary,
being forcibly tapered down.
You may remember as a health reporter, it wasn't that long ago when the conversation on this show and a million other places was, a new report says we're not treating pain enough. There
yeah,
are too many people.
I completely remember that. Yeah.
Lingering
was,
in hospitals.
But I think that's what we need to talk about.
And it was true, but it turns out that opiates for lots of people, I think it's overgeneralized, but for lots of people, long-term high-dose opiate is a really bad idea. Long-term high-dose opiate can increase your pain.
Hmm.
And it can be really a nightmare.
Mary.
And the problem is that if you've got a patient in your office and you've got 15 minutes to deal with them, writing an opiate prescription is cheap. Getting him to change his lifestyle so his back doesn't hurt so much is expensive and the insurance company won't pay for it.
Well, and it's not just that. It's also what are we treating here? Right now we're framing it as the opioid epidemic, the opioid crisis. But 40% of people on an opioid have a mental health problem. And I would argue it's probably more than that. So what are people treating with this pain medication?
Right.
I don't know that they're treating even pain. I think it's mental anguish too, and we're not getting to that problem.
We'll continue in a minute with Mary Harris and Mark Kleiman and your calls. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk about the Trump administration's first response to the opioid crisis unveiled by the president in New Jersey on his working vacation this week, with WNYC health reporter Mary Harris and Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at the NYU Mellon Institute of Urban Management and author of books including Drug Policy, What Everyone Needs to Know, and Anne Marie in Sussex County. You're on WNYC. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wondered what exactly would the on-ground movement look like if the president were to do as the interim report suggested in declaring a state of emergency to address what's happening with opioids.
Good question, because that was a breakout headline that Christie's commission had recommended a state of emergency declaration, and the Health and Human Services Commissioner Tom Price recommended to Trump that he not declare one. And they didn't. So what would have happened differently if they had?
Not a lot. State of emergency declaration frees up some emergency funding. Well, hurricane season's coming. Not obvious we want to use those funds for this. It loosens up a couple of regulatory things at HHS so that states can get waivers from various rules. We're in a very bad situation. It seems to me it doesn't meet the definition of emergency. There's no surprise here. The reason to have emergency funds is if the hurricane hits, you don't have to wait it to go through conference committee to get some money to it.
So you're basically with Tom Price on this one.
Well, I mean, it sort of surprises me that the Trump administration passed up an opportunity to do something completely meaningless but dramatic.
And on the pivot that we were talking about, between this as a public health problem and this as a crime problem. Don in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hey, Don.
Yes, how you doing? I'm calling about, it's great that the people are receiving the assistance, but, you know, for years, there's been a drug problem in America, but when it affects European Americans, now it's an epidemic and crisis. I think it's a white preference, and I think it's wrong that now all the attention is being made, and like when it comes to locking up, that, well, we shouldn't lock them up. But when it's African-American and Latino, lock them up. They're from single-family homes. They have no morality. I work with people who live in Suffolk County and Nassau County and majority European-American neighborhoods. And when you look at whether Chicago, I mean, Ohio, Kentucky, this is mostly a European-American epidemic that's really flowing to. And I think it's that they need to be locked up as well. I think, to me, if you don't, because people are also buying it illegally.
Do you think, I mean, I totally get the racial disparity you're talking about. We've talked about this on this show a million times, having to do with all kinds of crime and other behaviors, that when it's something that Black and Latino poor people do, society's response is, oh, we have to lock them up. And when white people do the same thing, it's like, oh, how are we failing as a society that these poor people have these problems? But which side of consistency do we want to come down on, Don? Do you really want to see the white drug users locked up, or do you want to see less of everybody locked up and treated as a public health issue?
Well, I think, to me, if you're going forward, if everyone is treated properly, equally, then take care of everyone. But if it's only for the whites, then no. They need to be locked up, just like when it comes to immigration. You have many Irish and British and Canadians and German here illegally, not just from overstaying their visa, but coming to the country illegally. You didn't have former Homeland Security John Kelly locking them up. You didn't see Attorney General Sessions saying, "You know what? We don't lock them up."
You're right. I totally take your point about the disparity. In fact, you know what I remember, Mary, the 1990s.
Mm.
The so-called super predators, that's a New York Post terminology, I think. But when, you know, when there was a lot of street crime, crack epidemic was going on, Black and Hispanic teenage street crime in New York, we had to stiffen penalties, we had to treat them as adults. But then when those high school shootings happened, like Columbine High School, and that raft of high school shootings was by white kids in exurban high schools, then America started talking about how we're failing our children as a society. I mean, that was really, really a racial disparity. But so maybe you remember that.
I do. And I think that it's important to look at what the president and his aides are saying and sort of see it through that filter of what we know to be true and not. One thing I was struck by looking at the comments of Kellyanne Conway and Tom Price is they brought up this idea of how many babies are born addicted to opioids now. And we know from the crack baby, quote unquote, epidemic, which we realized later wasn't a thing, that that's not necessarily a thing. So we need to really look carefully at what our leaders are saying we need to pay attention to, because that's an indicator of something, certainly, but we need to be careful about what is it an indicator of.
And when Trump recently got caught talking about New Hampshire as a big drug addicted den, he's talking about white people. Do you see policy responding differently because the problem now is seen as white?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack here. So the crack epidemic of the 80s, early 90s, it was an epidemic of drug addiction. It's also an epidemic of homicide. I mean, you can track the homicide explosion of that period going from city to city along with the crack market. So the notion that we took this public health problem and arbitrarily made it a criminal justice problem is nonsense. I mean, there was a criminal justice reaction because there were a lot of murders involved.
Well, that's why I brought up Columbine, because I think that's the more accurate analogy.
Well, except Columbine was a couple of, you know, freaked out kids. These were large numbers of people. And we had in the late 80s, for the first time, substantial number of murderers under 21. right? That's when you got the super predator was a term that the New York Post picked up. It was actually a term that was introduced by John DiIulio, trying to make sense of the fact that the usual stepping stone of violence, where the peak of murder is about 23, mm-hmm. had disappeared. And we're suddenly getting juveniles who are as deadly as adults. And he made a mistake.
Yeah, he recanted it.
Well, what he recanted was his prediction that, boy, if this is how bad they are at 18 and they're on the normal course, we're going to have a bloodbath when they're 23. Right. That wasn't right. He simply mistook a period effect for a cohort effect. But the fact that the crack epidemic was in fact associated with homicide was true. The fact that the first heroin epidemic, or the 1960s heroin epidemic, was associated with massive amounts of property crime was true. Mm-hmm. And when it hits communities that are less desperate, where people have more resources, where they can get by stealing from their families rather than committing burglaries, then it doesn't look like a crime problem.
I just want to get to one thing before we run out of time in about a minute and a half. The Christie Commission did include border enforcement to block fentanyl as a recommendation. Can you just say briefly, Mary, are you on this part of the story? What part in the drug crisis fentanyl is playing, and what's the role of China here?
Well, fentanyl is a huge part of the crisis. I mean, New York City reestimated that they went back and looked at old blood samples to see how much fentanyl was affecting drug deaths, and they found it was a huge part of things, and it's adulterated. People don't know they're getting fentanyl. People aren't necessarily seeking fentanyl.
What's fentanyl?
So there's everybody's making a big mistake here. There is a drug called fentanyl that's used surgically. Very potent opiate. It's about 10 times the potency of morphine. The stuff that's hitting the streets these days, there is some of that molecule, but there are probably 400 analogs. And they range in potency from about that same level to carfentanil, which is about 4,000 times the potency of morphine.
Is it largely a synthetic at this point?
It's entirely synthetic. That's the rising part of the over. So we had a wave of prescription drug overdoses, yes. Then a wave of heroin overdoses after OxyContin was reformulated to make it less injectable. Now we have a wave of fentanyl analogs.
We just have 10 seconds, but why do people keep saying China in respect to fentanyl? Can't the Walter Whites of the world make it here?
They will eventually, but right now it's coming from China and Mexico, which makes it stupid to talk about border control. It's already hard enough to control heroin where you could fit the national supply in a boxcar. You could fit the national supply of the fentanyls in a suitcase. We can't stop it at the border.
Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at NYU, author of books including Drug Policy, What Everyone Needs to Know, and WNYC's Mary Harris. You can hear her story at WNYC.org. Thank you both.
Thanks.